Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, Nate Tice of The Athletic joins us to talk about the first round of the NFL draft, what happened, and maybe more importantly, what didn't happen. But first, I wanted to tell you about another ESPN podcast. It's hosted by ESPN and Antscape contributor Dominique Foxworth. Yes, Dominique Foxworth, the Dominique Foxworth, my co-host occasionally on Debatable, a regular contributor to this show. He's smart, he's funny, he's talented, he's handsome, you get it, it's Dominique. Listen to his show every Tuesday and Thursday because it showcases Dom's unique perspectives on football, parenting, the NBA, and really anything Dominique finds interesting. It's a very good podcast, you know, because at least one time, every single time I listen, I have to turn it off because I get so angry at one of Dominique or Charlie's takes when it comes to usually the NBA, sometimes the NFL, but that's a good ratio. It is that good ratio of smart to I disagree, but it's smart to this is infuriatingly wrong. So as we gear up for the NFL draft, check out the Dominique Foxworth show. Listen wherever you are listening to this podcast. All right, joining me now here as promised on the show, it's my friend, the excellent expert NFL and college football analyst for The Athletic. It's Nate Tice. Nate, you're fresh off of a 4.5. Do you have a time on how long the draft show was yesterday?
I think it was 4:20. Elon Musk would be really happy.
Oh, gosh. Why did I set you up for that?
No, that's on me. I actually think it was, though, because we had a little 10-minute technical delay, but that was just more to titillize the viewership.
I don't like where this is. We're already 30 seconds in, and I'm questioning my choice of
guest. And I haven't even had my coffee yet. This is what happens. Yeah, I am running on coffee and words at this point in time.
Just fumes and vibes.
And so I know you didn't mean it this way, but how you said excellent, it was almost like I used to be excellent. Like I broke up with excellent. And now it's just merely there. So
formerly
excellent. Yeah, I am. Yeah, it's like when you see just a rocker, you know, when they're 65 and you're like, oh, man.
I thought
Eddie Money, what are you doing now?
Oh, I thought you meant like Marty Jannetty when you were talking about the Rockers.
That's even better. Damn it. That's the joke. And excellent.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Works on a lot of. I hope your ankles are better than Marty Jannetty's ankles. But we have a lot to get to, Nate. We have a lot to talk about.
I'm a bald Shawn Michaels right now. That's the version I am right there. That's fair. There you go. That's excellent. There we go. Let's go with that. Bald Shawn Michaels.
Speaking of excellent, Nate, someone who was seen as an excellent NFL prospect heading into the first round of the NFL draft and might be seen as an excellent NFL prospect after the first round of the NFL draft is Will Levis. We're going to start there because Will Levis, of course, maybe he was never going to be the first overall pick, which of course was that rumor on Reddit that got the offshore or the online sports books moving. Will Levis didn't go with the first pick, didn't go with the second pick, didn't go with any of the first 31 picks in this year's draft and ended up now waiting possibly to be selected in the second round of the NFL draft. So Nate, let's start with this. How surprised were you that we did not see Will Levis come off the board in the first round?
Quite surprised. I thought even, okay, favorite as the number two pick, what, like a week ago? And it felt right. Like I even talked myself into it as I, you know, do 20 shows on it. And then it's kind of like after a while, you're just arguing with yourself. It's just a mirror version of yourself with a mirror version of yourself. And after a while, I was like, you know, I get it. That why Texans might like Levis. You know, they have Bobby Slowick and they might run that offense that he's comfortable with. Okay, mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And I did a rewatch them for a video. And I even talked to myself. I was like, okay, I get it. I get taking this guy in the top, you know, 14-ish, you know, somewhere in that range. Maybe the Bucks move up, or maybe the Titans take a chance and they start their clock, or if it falls for them. And that's what surprised me is once he passed the Bucks and then the Vikings, I know that's in what, pick 24, pick 23. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. Like that's like pretty crazy. But like once the Bucks thing happened, because I was like, oh man, I bet you they're stoked right now. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to move up. They might get this quarterback. This is really interesting. And nothing happened. He just kept hanging out there. He literally was hanging out there in the green room. Yes. And yeah. So I, Yeah, I am surprised. I really am surprised because I, even if he has blemishes and he was my like quarterback four of these mm-hmm. of these four guys, I still had a first round grade on him. That's just me personally. Mm-hmm. And I know people that did like him. But yeah, I was just very it was very interesting that he dropped out completely from the first round, especially with some teams that we thought that might be looking for a quarterback in the future.
Do you think the hype about him as a possible top five pick hurt him in the long run, or do you think it doesn't matter from the team perspective in terms of how they are evaluating possible prospects?
I don't think it matters too much because it's that's the disconnect that even when I was working with teams, it's just like these teams have these guys graded mm-hmm. and then they're just kind of like, yeah, that's our grade on them. And then when they see, say they have a second round grade on a guy and they see like Kuiper mocking him in the top 10, they kind of just go like, ha, 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 ha. You know, at least that's what teams try to do. You know, they have their hubris, mm-hmm. but that is what I think more teams just had him graded certain ways. And apparently there's medical concerns with his toe, mm-hmm. which is a new one for me. Toe being like, imagine your whole career being tanked by your toe. Sure. That'd be very interesting to me. I saw that thing off, but it's the... I think just teams had him graded a certain way, maybe medically or just his on-field play. And then mm-hmm. maybe the teams that had him high are the ones not taking a quarterback, you know, or they had a different situation where they're like, oh, if things go a certain way, we might take him. Mm-hmm. But if so-and-so is on the board, we'll take him we'll take this guy instead. So I think that maybe is what it is, that even teams that maybe had him high, there might have been another guy high on their board. And they're like, mm-hmm. we're going with the other position, even if it is the quarterback position.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. I guess what really surprised me, though, is that we didn't see a team, you know, at least aggressively enough, try to trade back into the bottom few picks of the first round to get him. Like, I can believe a scenario where I'm trying to think of a team that would be like the Raiders, for example. They take yeah. Tyree Wilson at 7. No question. No issue there. I think that makes sense. But surprised that if, you know, that there was no one out there who had a first round or you know, a first round grade on Levis or a top 10 grade on Levis, given the positional value where they did trade into to 29 or 28 yeah. or 31, you know, kind of figured that would be the range where a team would be willing to do that. But whether it was those teams wanting to hold onto those picks, whether it was the teams in the first half of round two thinking we can get him without trading up for him, or whether it was just it didn't work out for one reason or another, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Rams might have been sniffing.
They might still be sniffing.
Yeah, I thought they might sneak back into the first round, but maybe how the thing was falling, they're like, hey, we might get them in the second, not have to do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not F them picks. Maybe harness those picks.
Cherish those picks. I mean, they're at 36.
Yes.
And
yes.
The teams ahead of them, Steelers, don't need a quarterback. Cardinals, I don't think they would take Will Levis, but they could trade down. Yes. The Lions could. But
that's interesting one. Yeah,
we'll talk about the Lions.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
We'll talk about them. And the Colts just drafted Anthony Richardson, so they're not taking Will Levis. So possibility that someone could trade ahead of the Rams, but I think it is defensible for them to say, hey, like nobody wanted to trade for him before. I think there's a decent chance we might get him at 36. Maybe that's what they were thinking.
Yeah, especially with the connections there with Liam Cohen, offense coordinator, all that stuff, the offense translating a common comparison for Levis, not one I agreed with. I went with Ryan Tannehill, but it was Stafford. It was kind of like a Diet Coke version of Stafford, and I get it because he's tough. He throws trick shots all over the yard. You know, he's got great arm talent. You know, he has blemishes. All these guys have blemishes. Trevor Lawrence's don't come around all that often, or mm-hmm. Andrew Luck, you know. So even with guys going high in the first round, these guys all had warts on them in some way, shape, or form. His, though, it's if there's a place for him to succeed and have a path, like the Rams want to make total sense to me. I think that actually be really conducive for both parties and kind of a plan going forward. Because the Rams this year just seem kind of like it's like watching them are like, are you guys trying to win games? Like, what are you trying to do, Los Angeles Rams? Are you winning games? Are you building for the future? What are you doing? So at least this will kind of like give them some vision or clarity of what they might be trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of a team where I'm not sure if they're trying to win games or tank or not having any sort of clarity, let's get to the biggest trade of the evening and what happened at the third overall pick. There were some rumors the Houston Texans could take Will Anderson at 2 and then trade up for a quarterback at 3. That didn't make a ton of sense. How they did it made more sense to me. Get the quarterback at 2 and then make your move at 3. But the Texans trade what I can only describe as an exorbitant amount of draft capital. They move up from they get CJ Stroud at 2, so they don't take Will Levis at 2 after all those rumors, and then trade up from 12 to 3. Don't give up as much as the Niners gave up for Trey Lance a few years ago, but they give up 12, 33, first and third round picks in 2024, including their own first round pick, not the Browns first round pick, but Houston's own first round pick in 2024 to land Will Anderson. They also get a fourth round pick in this year's draft in return. So this was tough for me, Nate, because I really loved Will Anderson. I was saying, you know, like all the talk about Tyree Wilson over him, I was saying, let's just, you know, watch the tape. He's a phenomenal player, has been for a couple of years now. And now, after this trade where he's valued at, I believe, more than the first overall pick, I'm sort of wondering, like even at a premium position, even at a, you know, for a player who I think will be a superstar, is this too much to trade to move up for a non-quarterback for a team that is so far away from competing in the AFC South, let alone competing for a Super Bowl?
I'll start by saying I agree with you on Will Anderson. I believe him and Michael Mayer, tight end from Notre Dame, I'm kind of like, why are we overthinking this? Like, these guys have been very good for very long against top competition, and they tested more than fine. So am I missing something? So I do understand the love for Anderson, but that is a lot to give up. Like, good for the Cardinals. Like, that is idealistic of what they could potentially get going into this. And, you know, maybe if someone did want to move up for a quarterback at 3, and I'm sure, you know, once the Texans came calling, they're like, okay, yeah, this is great. You guys want to do this? Well, let's go. And I think that it is hard to swallow when you move up for a non-QB like this. Mm-hmm. We were even trying to think of, like, what are the other big moves been for non-quarterbacks? You know, Julio's
the famous one. Yeah.
The famous one. And then Sammy Watkins giving up a first, straight up first. Well, and then I believe you and I talked about with Chris Olave.
Yeah,
and how much the Saints ended up maneuvered themselves, what they ended up giving up for Chris Olave last year, and all those time, all the movement they made to get that pick. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's hard to swallow. As much as I love the player, I don't agree with sacrificing that much. And you could say, yes, we have picks, we can do these things. Seems like teams with the picks were just like,
yeah,
they had daddy's credit card, and they were willing to spend. Hey, you want a shot? Yeah, I got you. What do you want? You want a burger? I got you too. Yeah. So that's what it kind of seemed to me, that they were kind of, rather than going, oh, we want as many bites at the apple wanted, they're like, no, it's a maneuver to get our guys.
Right.
Which is kind of, I don't know. I go back and forth on that pretty hard when it's these kind of picks that you're sacrificing. So yeah, I kind of agree with you. It's a rich amount that they gave up. I understand that Texans want to sell tickets and build some goodwill.
Sure.
And also, you know, maybe give D'Amico his guy, and maybe they were on, okay, we have four guys that we have to come out of this draft with, and this is the way they did it. So I'm curious what the dynamics were leading into that. Like, was this like, hey, we have an opportunity, or was this like, hey, I better get my guy. Okay, we got to figure out how to do this. You know, I don't know. But I think there's a lot where they're like, hey, we need some building blocks to actually build around on offense and defense. And I like both players, CJ Stroud and Will Anderson. But yeah, the Will Anderson move was a lot.
I love the idea of D'Amico Ryans negotiating with the Texans and being like, I'm not taking this job unless you promise me Will Anderson in this draft.
Right. He's like, I better get my fellow Crimson Tider. that's it. That was the caveat. That was the amendment in his contract. Yeah.
I wouldn't blame him, frankly. Yeah, like, it was, Will Anderson's a great player.
Right. It was, number 31. Like, that was his, like, 31A. Will Anderson better be acquired by the Texans by the time April is over. if not, the contract is void and he just goes back to San Francisco.
I'm going back to my roster with Javon Hargrave and Nick Bosa and every guy set up front.
Oh, nice, warm, comfy bed.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
of defensive ends with their ears pinned back. It's great.
Right. The same thing with the Cardinals, right? Like, you know, you have Jonathan Gannon, who was involved with a weird tanking case that we discovered about
when
the draft started.
That happened,
totally,
like,
got lost in the shuffle.
The last thing I saw before we went live was that happening. I was like, what just happened here?
It was very odd. But the Cardinals sort of do what the Dolphins did a couple of years ago. They trade down from 3 to 12, they get a bunch of draft capital, and then back up from 12 to 6 to get Paris Johnson, who was the guy by all accounts they wanted at 3 originally. So Brandon Gannon does not get a pass rusher with that first pick, but you sort of see a team that has not been very good about investing in their offensive line, a team that's been sort of getting by for a decade with free agents and outside of DJ Humphreys, kind of, you know, short-term options. They finally go out and get a building block on the offensive line. Now, I just, you know, what I found interesting is that even though they did trade up, which, you know, you give up some draft capital to do it, it felt like the Cardinals were more realistic about where they are and how far they are from competing and what they need to do to get there than the Texans were. Do you think that's just a product of the Cardinals having been more competitive recently than the Texans have, or just a roster building philosophy? Like how would you approach those two situations if you're thinking about rebuilding? Do you want to go out in a vacuum and take swings on stars? Are you more about, let's try to get four or five good pieces and hope that one of them turns out to be better than we expected?
I kind of the believer of four or five good pieces and hope one's better than expected, and just bet on the guys that have room for growth. And I think Paris Johnson does. He was my offensive tackle one going into this anyways. And apparently Kyler Murray's too, you know, Kyler Murray, offensive line guru, who knew, you know, he's just scouting guys. And this was his guy apparently. But it's with Paris Johnson is that I think he has a good mentality. He's by all accounts a pro's pro already. And I think for the Cardinals, that's huge because they're building from scratch. You can't go wrong. Any spot that they selected, maybe outside a receiver, I would have just been like, yeah, yep, you need that. That's what you guys need. So that makes sense. And why not go through the trenches? And maybe that to me, it seems like, okay, at that point where if they're at six, Chris Johnson, Tyree Wilson, Jalen Carter are kind of the guys that are maybe ahead above maybe the other guys at their position. Mm-hmm. Okay, Jalen Carter's got character stuff. Okay, we don't want to do that. It seems by all accounts, Cardinals are kind of going like, you know, start with the GM's initial messaging about building a team outside of just building players. And I believe was his kind of hardo opening statement. So I think that was their philosophy. So to me, it was like, okay, you're building through the trenches. Now is it Paris Johnson or Tyree Wilson? Tyree Wilson apparently had some foot concerns for some teams. Mm-hmm. So maybe they didn't had issues there. I think it's just building through the trenches, building inside out. They're in a weird position where they need everything except for quarterback, most likely, because they are signed him to a big deal. So it's kind of a interesting scenario where the biggest need for most of these kind of rebuilding teams, they kind of already have some of an answer with Kyler. But I just think this was a philosophy of building through the trenches and start, hey, let's go inside out. Let's help out that quarterback and then go from there. And then hopefully we can add cherries on top in the future.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, the Texans did go out and draft players at probably the two most important or two most expensive positions in football. They go out and get a quarterback and you go out and get an edge rusher. So very different from perhaps using your two first round picks to go get a running back and an off ball linebacker, which is where the Lions ended up. This is my fault. I take personal blame for this because I am the one who, listening to Robert Mays on your athletic stream, was like, wow, as Mays pointed out, the Lions have the 12th, 18th, 34th, 48th, and 55th picks. And they use the 12th pick on running back Jahmyr Gibbs and the 18th pick on Iowa linebacker Jack Campbell. So, Nate, I don't need to have the positional value argument like everyone listening to this knows, but let me frame it this way. How good do those guys have to be to make it worth their draft position? And what are the chances that those two guys hit that level?
They, especially at those spots, off ball linebacker or running back, you better be on the field just to start 40 plus snaps a game. There you better not be having to be taken out in sub packages. Right. You can't handle this. We don't want to ask you to do that. I actually think Jack Campbell has more likelihood of doing that than Jahmyr Gibbs.
Really?
Jack Campbell he's fine. Like I looked at him as like a second round linebacker. I looked at him as like the second linebacker. If you stacked him behind Drew Sanders from Arkansas, he tested better than you expected, but he has to be on the field every snap, be covering. He's your true old school linebacker, racking up hundreds of tackles and covering everybody that you ask him to do. And I think he does have ability to do that. Like, and he's tough. He's like very sound. But I don't know, in this type of draft, or I get that this draft is wide open, especially after the top 10 picks, especially there's a drop off at positions, but it's still just so rich for that. It's like, he's not Keekly, you know, he's not a guy that's like, oh my God, this guy's gonna be a Pro Bowl or rookie year. I think he'll be a productive player, but more just like a good solid player, but that's still very rich for pick 18. Now, Jahmyr Gibbs. Yeah, this is the this one blew my mind, and I know people love him, and I'm a little lower on him than others. I believe he was like running back 3 for me because I'm a sucker for size. So I'd Charbonnet from UCLA is 2.
Sure.
Also, like what I said, he has to be on the field and play snaps. It's all about snaps that you can play and contribute for. He's not good in pass protection. He's not a big running back. He's a home run hitter. This felt to me like the Travis Etienne pick a few years ago for the Jags, which was fine, and he turned out to be a good player for them this past year, but he's limited in some ways. And also, you already just invested in running back and paying David Montgomery a good amount of money. But it's very rich, not only because of the running back, the positional value, but Gibbs would have to be, to me, a Pro Bowler. At least at some point in this rookie contract, because this is – to me, very rich for a guy that I think is a little bit limited as a running back as far as how you can use him. He's a great pass catcher. He's a home run hitter, but he's not a guy you use in short yardage. He's not a guy that you're going to use on third down to pass protection. Yes, he can maybe do that in the future, but not even his size is conducive for that. He weighed 199 at the combine. Yeah, and he looks like he's in 190s. That's not usually the guy you want doing that anyway. So I don't know. I appreciate the explosive nature of his game. I don't want to dog him too much. He's really fun, but I compared him to Felix Jones the other day. And Felix Jones went in the first round of the 20s. I was like, I probably shouldn't have. And that's kind of how I feel about Gibbs as well.
Nate, you were probably in school. There was a point where we on the internet talking about Felix Jones had to vehemently defend the possibility that Felix Jones was not actually like the best running back prospect after the first 2 years in the NFL, because he averaged 6.5 yards per carry on 146 carries.
He was the original Tony Pollard.
He was more than Tony Pollard. On it, there was the summer of 2010. Felix Jones was like, how do you not think Felix Jones is the next LaDainian Tomlinson? And it was like, well, there might be reasons why, guys.
Yeah, you gotta give him a little pathway to do anything. Yeah. And that's how Gibbs is. That's actually kind of funny. Very start-stoppy, and then it's like, whoa, but if he gets some room, look at him go. And it's like, what about all the other plays when he touches the ball?
Right. And it's not fair to him. Like, no. He doesn't choose where he gets drafted. No. And same thing with Jack Campbell. And like chances are these are gonna be good football players, but there's also a realistic universe. I don't know if it's a guarantee, but a realistic universe where the Lions get these guys with their second round picks and have two other guys in the first round. And I think that's the upsetting part.
And linebacker, and this is what I want to say again with Campbell, the linebacker draft and the off-ball linebacker class for this draft is not good. It is a big drop off after Campbell and Sanders, and maybe like a couple other guys are up there, but that's just even like guys you look at in the top 100. But that's what's, to me, super curious at the running back going with Gibbs, is that it's a good running back class with depth. And there's plenty more guys that you would take in the third round, but that's totally fine. You have a good offensive line. You have David Montgomery already. You don't need this. This just felt to me like a very much like a heat check. Like, we have good vibes. We know better. Yeah, let's do it. He is a fun player. So I get there is a lot to like, but it's just so rich. And it just the processes make a ton of sense to me. I mean, you guys wouldn't like Lucas Van Ness, who want to pick later. Like, right. You guys need front seven help. Like, why not go with, I don't know. There's just so many more toolsy guys that, yes, they have blemishes. They're not perfect, but there's like that just more a tangible position that you usually can't find at that position. I just think that the drop-off isn't as steep at the running back position on day two.
Right, and including a player like DeAndre Swift, who the Lions drafted in day two a couple years ago. And now, suddenly, the Lions have very little leverage because it's clear they don't want DeAndre Swift anymore. And DeAndre Swift was a very valuable player when healthy, obviously. Felt like they had soured on him in a few different ways as last year went along, but we're already hearing reports, according to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, that DeAndre Swift is going to be on the trade market. His representatives are looking for a team. The Lions presumably are going to be talking to teams. if you were trying to project a landing spot for DeAndre Swift, that would make sense. Where, you know, obviously at a reduced cost, you'd figure maybe a mid or late round pick for DeAndre Swift. Where do you think he would end up, and where would be a good spot for him to make an impact, you know, as a realistically a part-time player?
Yeah, the Cowboys would be interesting. You know, with Pollard, and they need another back as Pollard comes back from injury, and just kind of, you know, we all like Tony Pollard, but it's like, yeah, I don't want to give him 25 touches every game, right. You know, maybe once in a while, but not every game. I think they would make sense to me. I would also think a team like the Chargers.
That's exactly who I was going to say.
I think that's exactly what they need. And take a look, it's him and Eckler would be very explosive. It'd actually be a very, very fun pairing, even if they're both. Usually you get the Thunder and Lightning pairing, but it's pretty fun having a Lightning and Lightning kind of pairing. And Eckler's good as a pass protector, so you have that answer. So I don't know. I think the Chargers would make a lot of sense as maybe throwing a day three pick. Throw, you know, they keep trying to find this running back too, and they keep whiffing. So as well get a guy that has a little more proof in the pudding with his play.
Yeah, I also like the Broncos too, although they did add Samaje Perine. They have Javonte Williams coming back, so maybe not a high priority for a team that has negligible draft capital this year. But certainly it feels like there's going to be a spot where he makes sense, and he can be, you know, again, with appropriate expectations, a valuable player at the right price.
Absolutely. That now that he's kind of, we've properly gauged him, I think is more of a home run hitter type that, you know, you want to give those 10-ish touches to, 8 to 12 touches to. But as a number two, and if you have a guy that can take 60% of the touches, like that, I think he's perfect for that.
Absolutely. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jet's Pizza location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be. Okay, so let's get to the run of wide receivers here in the 20s. So we have Jaxon Smith-Njigba going 20 to the Seahawks, Quentin Johnston going 21 to the Chargers, Zay Flowers 22 to the Ravens, Jordan Addison 23 to the Vikings. This feels like the draft equivalent of a challenge trade to me. Like you have these four teams who took four players for four different reasons, but inevitably we're going to look back on this 3 years from now, and I feel like we're going to be like, why did they get picked in that order? Kind of like the Justin Jefferson, Jalen Reagor thing, where it was, you know, how could we possibly have seen that? Even though it seems pretty reasonable now as we talk about it the first day after the draft. So let me ask you this, Nate, about these receivers. Number one, did they go in the order you expected? And number two, of those four players and their four landing spots, whose fit do you like the best?
It literally is how I stacked them. That's 1, 2, 3, 4 for me, which I was... Beautiful. Please, this punch. I also kind of quasi under my breath predicted the Quentin Johnston to the Chargers like a couple picks before it happened. I was pretty proud of that, and I want to pat myself on the back for that one.
I was mad because someone tweeted at 20 that the Seahawks were going to take Nolan Smith, and I was like, okay, great, we're getting Jaxon Smith-Njigba to the Chargers. Like I already talked myself into it as like a long term Keenan Allen replacement, and then they tweeted, oh, actually no, Smith-Njigba went to the Seahawks. I'm like, damn it. Okay,
and then Johnston came through. I think just like everybody, I'm excited to see Jaxon Smith-Njigba with the Seahawks. I think that offense is going to be really fun this year. If they could have one more lineman and maybe another tight end for the future. I know they have a plethora of them right now, the contracts are all kind of expiring in different ways after this year.
Right.
That would be kind of idealistic to me. I really think their offense is going to be a lot of fun this year, like a top 6-7 unit. And I don't think I'm too outlandish in saying that. But it's so I'm really excited to see him. And that's as far as the synergy. And I think I used synergy about 5 times in a row last night because because four receivers got selected in a row. So I'm like, oh, I gotta talk about receiver rooms. It's the perfect fit. DK Metcalf is your outside ball winner. And then you got Tyler Lockett as the Z who can go inside and out. And he's kind of the intermediate guy. He can do deep balls, kind of do a little bit of everything. And then Jaxon Smith-Njigba is your underneath guy. And I love that. And they needed a slot desperately. They were limited last year. That's why they use tight ends so much. It's like, they're like, we're not trotting out a third receiver. No, this guy's JV compared to everybody else. So his is the easy fit that I like the most. And then I actually like Johnson, I think, more than other people do. Mm-hmm. I got lowered on him throughout the process. I think everybody did. His name's been dragged through the mud. He hasn't done anything like wrong. He is limited. He's more of a project type, but there are gifts that, and he's just a different flavor of player than the Chargers have. He actually has explosive ability. They desperately need that. They need somebody that can break a tackle just outside of Austin Ekeler.
Right.
He's not a perfect prospect. There's a lot of blemishes with him. But as far as his tools and as far as the situation where he doesn't have to be the guy getting 120 targets right away, 130 targets right away at his rookie year, he can kind of ease in and grow. And I think he's in a pretty decent situation for that. So I actually really like that pairing more, maybe more than others. And I like the player more than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And certainly it feels like they've been throwing the ball a ton. Yeah. Doesn't seem like that's likely to change with Kellen Moore coming over from the Cowboys. Maybe the kinds of throws they'll be making might be changing.
Yeah, it's I can really picture him doing some of the things that CD was asked to do, but even though they're very different type of players. I think Johnson, as big as he is, mm-hmm. his play style is somewhat smaller, which is both good and bad. His movement ability, yards after catch ability, but I could see him those over routes that CD was so good on, like everything working from the slot, outside stuff being crossers. You want to get him on the move. And I think that with Mike Williams kind of out on the outside, that's actually kind of nice because he can kind of do the static routes that Kellen Moore likes to use in the now the Chargers offensive coordinator. So he's the static route guy. Keenan Allen's your slot kind of or outside kind of route runner type. And then they still have Joshua Palmer, I actually think is now going to be in a perfect spot as a kind of receiver 3-4 backing up all the spots. And now you got Quentin Johnson as kind of like a glorified gadget guy, and a guy that's like, okay, we have this play, this screen, or we have this crossing route where we're getting them on the move. Like now they have a guy that it makes sense. They try to do with Gerald Everett at tight end as that guy. And that's what I think Quentin Johnson is more of a Gerald Everett replacement than anything else, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, there's this two-pronged approach to what's going to happen this year and what's going to happen 2 or 3 years from now. I mean,
right.
Even as early as 2024, this could be an offense with no Gerald Everett, with no Austin Ekeler, and no Keenan Allen. It could look totally different from what we see right now. So
it's, yeah. So it was needed. The Chargers contract situations are pretty, it's pretty hilarious, I'm sure, as you know. Like there's a lot of $30 million hits and a lot of guys coming off the book pretty soon. So it's I think they're trying to crank their window and find maybe a needle mover in any way, shape, and form that they can. I said this on our show last night, is I don't think Johnson's going to have a very productive rookie year. Like I think we look back and it's like, oh, he had 600 yards or something like that. But there's going to be moments where he really flashes this year where there's we're going to be, like, oh my God, he was the second receiver taken. How did people let him go with Justin Herbert? And then you like actually watch the film and it's like, he's kind of useless for 15 plays. So, but I think that's kind of, that's how I picture his rookie season going. I think it's the classic 3-year build for the receiver. Remember that used to be the whole thing, the third year receiver breakout. I think that's what the path Johnson will be on in his career, but that might not be great for where the Chargers are at right now, but don't hate it all the way.
Well, I mean, the other thing is like the Chargers wide receivers, I don't want to be too critical. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are great players. They're not always the healthiest guys on the field. So like there's a chance that you just end up needing Quentin Johnston to start because Mike Williams is hurt or Keenan Allen's hurt or they're banged up or, you know, but like I feel like it's sort of also in the short term leverage against one of those guys getting injured.
Absolutely.
Not that he's a plug and play replacement.
No, but I totally get it.
Player.
But it's not DeAndre Carter. You know, it's not like you're dropping
off. Who was the guy? There was like a couple of years ago, like when in the Philip River years when guys get hurt, was it Seishi Asheratutu would like go from being like the fifth wide receiver to being the wide receiver one for Philip River some weeks?
Just getting peppered every third down. Yes. It's like him and Antonio Gates just going to work. Yeah. Well, that's the thing with the Chargers is that just because their team building philosophy, they had two very expensive receivers that barely played. And that was the lack of like value that that team had was it's a huge drop off when you're investing that much money and then you have to throw 100 some targets to a journeyman like DeAndre Carter. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like you said, that is good insurance. I totally agree with that. And you know, another thing, you know, he's going to a franchise where health has always been a priority for Chargers, yes. for Chargers players. So did they do something with their medical staff or team doctor? I think they changed it.
I think every couple of years they just fire someone from their staff.
It's the drummer for Spinal Tap. That's what they're going through right now. And they're all exploding. I mean, the players are too. But it's so hopefully maybe there's some upturn for the health of Chargers players.
Wow. The CJ Azure 200 yard game. Patrick Creighton was the number two receiver for the Chargers. Chris Wilson had a 37-yard catch.
Oh, yeah.
Randy McMichael was 2 for 23. Lots of names in this Chargers box score as they beat the Texans.
What was it?
This was 2010, November 7th, 2010. Philip Rivers still 17-23 for 295 okay. and four touchdowns with Seiji Asheratutu as his number one receiver.
It was like 11 targets, 8 for 90 or something like that.
Seiji was 4 of 5 for 111.
Oh, 111. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Good for him. Yeah. I love those random games, the random blow-up games.
But... Random blow-up games. And also, if you're going to make the Philip Rivers Hall of Fame case, we can start there.
Yeah. Like, look who he was carrying.
Yes.
But that's the thing. At the end of his run with the Chargers, too, there's times where he was just making some of these. He had, like, his fifth center in. And you would have had no idea.
Of course.
Like just everything was running smoothly. It's like that then and there is just like the fact that this is operational and you know it's all Philip. You know, it's not like the coach is coaching him up. So it's like that's all I need to see is like he just made that franchise look tolerable for years and years mm-hmm. and years. I mean, I know he was loaded, that the team was loaded when he first started, but by the yep. end there, it was like they had some doldrum talent that they were trotting mm-hmm. out.
Mm-hmm. No question. Now, a team that is not dealing with doldrum talent because the league somehow lets them get the exact.
Does that even make sense? Doldrum talent? Like, is
it does. Of course it does.
It does. Okay. That wasn't just a yogiism that I had right there.
No. I mean, you can have talent and still be in the doldrums. No question.
Okay.
But the Eagles, not in the doldrums and have tons of talent because they somehow landed Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith while having to trade up one spot for the two players combined. I see the combination of like how do we let this happen and Howie Roseman is a genius and like it doesn't have to be that hard, right? Like,
right,
we have a guy who has prioritized defensive linemen consistently throughout the years, defensive linemen and offensive linemen, of course, in the first round of the draft. Jalen Carter fell close enough that they could trade up, and then Nolan Smith just fell through the entirety of the first round. So obviously both valuable, but in a vacuum, who were you sort of more surprised to see the Eagles land where they landed them, Jalen Carter or Nolan Smith?
I would say actually Jalen Carter. Really? I think Nolan Smith, and it's funny, I think there is an agreement. Nolan Smith is going to be a good player. Maybe just not that star. I think a very super useful player. I've compared him to Bruce Irvin. And I think that's kind of what his role would be, kind of a do everything Swiss Army knife. So I don't see him ever accumulating. He might. I mean, he has plenty of tools, mm-hmm. Like a 12 sack season, which would get you in the Pro Bowl. I see him more as like that auxiliary pass rusher that you can drop into coverage and all that. So I feel like 30 is actually very 30 is very like exactly where he should have been slotted. So I wasn't as shocked as maybe some other people, maybe because I think as the mock draft process has gone on, everyone kind of kept bumping him up and up and up and up and up after he tested. But like with Jalen Carter, there's especially that the Bears moved back down a pick. And I actually was kind of going like, wow, the Bears might actually get that blue chipper after moving back. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. But they're maybe not in that position to, as a team, you know, to handle potential character concerns. And that's something you just always have to remember. I thought maybe someone else would just take a stab on Carter. Whether it be the Raiders or even the Falcons. I don't think the Falcons they wouldn't really do that, but I just thought maybe they might make an exception for the talent. So I just thought maybe, or the Seahawks even at five, I thought somebody would take a stab on him or move up for him. So I actually, in a weird way, am more surprised, even though he was long rumored to not last outside the top 10, the Eagles were his, you know, his floor. it was just surprising to me that I thought somebody else would take a stab and somebody else might make a move for him. So I'm actually a little more surprised about that one.
Yeah, I mean, I will say it felt like there were some rumors about Nolan Smith possibly going to the Eagles at 10, and then they get him at 30. And that doesn't always work out that way. I mean, I remember the Reuben Foster thing where John Lynch said they were going to take Reuben Foster at 3, and then they ended up taking Solomon Thomas, and then they get Reuben Foster at the end, and that didn't work out for, like, you know, for injuries and off-field reasons as well. Yeah. But, you know, it doesn't always mean that you aren't landing two superstars, but it just felt like for a team that has to transition their roster in a universe now where Jalen Hurts is getting a raise of $50 million a year. If you could have told them, hey, I mean, sure. And deserved after carrying, not Dane, but certainly Robert Mays for 4 hours last night. Oh,
stop. You're so mean.
Like it just kind of felt like, okay, this is your dream scenario. If you're right. Howie Roseman, like, no, you can't guarantee the prospects are going to be great. No, you can't guarantee that you're going to be as good as you were a year ago. But if you're going to thrive with an expensive quarterback, which they very famously did not do in the Carson Wentz era, the way to do it is get the sort of core components of your roster, your edge rushers, your defensive line rotation that you've been able to spend so much money on in years past, and find cheaper solutions. And Jalen Carter might not be as good as Javon Hargrave, but maybe he will be. And Nolan Smith might not be as good as, I don't know, the third or fourth member of that edge rotation. They may have to move on from someone like a Derek Barnett.
Right.
You know, a couple of years from now, Brandon Graham's going to be retiring at some point in the near future. But you have a guy who, you know, at least in terms of draft pedigree, can be an impactful player at that spot. And so I think it at least gives them the best possible chance of succeeding as they transition their roster from Jalen Hurts being one of the biggest bargains in football to Jalen Hurts making market value on a new deal.
And people keep constantly praising, you know, the Eagles, rightfully so. They're like, oh, they always have a succession plan. They always have an answer for that next position and always have that. And why they're able to do that is because they invest in it. It's very hard to build the trenches. Mm-hmm. You can hit on a middle round pick. You can get a Jordan Mailata for a seventh rounder and develop him, of course. But you usually have to invest in those positions, and especially defensive line. So it, to me, if you want to build through the trenches, this is how you do it. You got to have these plans where, okay, yeah, Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox aren't playing forever. So we got to get some guys, even if they aren't a one-to-one replacement, they can play those spots and they have talent and pedigree. Mm-hmm. This isn't, again, theory. Like, you know, you look at their roster and you just look at how many of those defensive guys have a first round, like former first round selection next to their name. You know, Jordan Davis, Derek Barnett, like you said, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, you know, all these guys now Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, all these guys were first rounders for the Eagles. And that's not even including Reddick, who was a first rounder in the past. So it's that they're investing in it. And I'm all about it. I love that. It's just people want to say the rich get richer. But having a plan and a succession plan is just as important as having talent now. And that's easy to say where the Eagles are in that position. They have draft capital. They also have a locker room that can handle Jalen Carter, I think. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't say, like, I don't know Jalen, and I shouldn't, like, talk like that, but it's just, you know, what there are the concerns with him. But if there's any locker room that can handle someone that you might have issues with or concerns about, this is the best locker room for it, as far as offense alignment, defense alignment, the veterans that they have, and all the former Georgia teammates.
That's what I was going to say. Mean,
it's like the Kobe D and everybody.
The straight-up Georgia locker room is now in Philadelphia.
They're going to surround him. They literally surrounded him with, like, an ideal setting with all of his former buddies. So I think it's a great situation, but it's one of those where we always praise Howie, and rightfully so, I do think, because of just this, that is that he has a plan and it has a way to bridge, you know, from one way to the other. It's like the Colossus of Rhodes. Like, you know, it's just that's how I picture it. Like, there's 1 foot over here and there's 1 foot over there, and then that's how they transition from one to the other. Can we get all the Eighth Wonder of the Worlds referenced in
I thought you were referencing Nathan Jones. So I was off on that one. Okay.
No, I'm going. I'm really doing the needle moving references here. I'm going right to the wonders of the world, and not China. I'm not including the former Intercontinental Champion.
R.I.P. China. R.I.P. Let's finish up here, Nate. We're looking at the first pick of the second round, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who took Broderick Jones. They traded up in the first round, gave up a fourth round pick to move up three spots and take Broderick Jones. Patriots, they go to 17. They take Christian Gonzalez. Think both those moves make sense. Nate, I will put you on the spot to finish up here. Who do the Steelers take with the first pick of the second round?
It has to be Joey Porter Jr., right?
It feels like it.
It's like the stars are aligning. I mean, they were, it was looked like that they might take him at 17. And like, I know I was one person that was like, yeah, that makes sense. Why not? Well, yeah, goodwill. Let's do it. I mean, Joey Porter Jr. makes all the sense in the world. Team need. Where he has kind of been slotted at, like, he's not, again, not a perfect prospect, otherwise you go in the top 10. But just also, you know, it's a great, the Steelers love that stuff. Steelers love mm-hmm. legacy stuff. Of and also course. Another thing, even at, outside of Joey Porter Jr. being Joey Porter Jr., the Steelers have a thing where they always have a Penn State, Pitt, or Notre Dame guys on their roster. Like they seriously do. They like, they make it a thing. Like if they don't have one, they're going to make sure to sign or draft one. They have plenty right now, you know, Pat Freiermuth and all that, but they're going to make sure that Kenny Pickett from Pitt, they're going to make sure that there's a little, those guys get a little bit of bump. So even outside of the name, there's mm-hmm. the school tie-in that they love as well. So he just feels the stars are aligning for Joey Porter Jr. to go to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and they need long-term options at corner. Patrick Peterson, they signed this offseason.
I'm terrified of Patrick Peterson there. Guarding T. Higgins. Chase. I love Patrick Peterson, but not like this. You know, yeah. Not like this.
Yeah, Levi Wallace is there. Arthur Mollett's there from the Jets. I mean, there's some guys who can be short-term solutions there, but they need to rebuild that cornerback room in the long term. So I think Porter makes total sense. Now, yes. I'm always a fan. I'm always arguing teams should try to trade this pick for a future one, but it never happens, which probably tells you they're not getting offered future ones for this pick. But my dream, if I ever run a team, Nate, and I will never run a team, if I have the 33rd pick in the draft, if I have the first pick in the second round, that pick is any first round pick is what that pick is getting swapped for. So just know that's what's going to happen.
That's where the offer starts. That's yeah. Anyone you want to start talking, you want to talk to Bill, you want to call him up. Yeah. That first round pick better be in hand. You know, that's where
we don't have to worry about this happening in the future, but just I always love the theory.
I like the fan fiction. I like it. I'm going to make that canon of the Bill Barnwell show that like, we're going to talk like we're GMs and this we're negotiating just openly right now.
Yes, absolutely. Nate, not a GM, but you are a extensive video and podcast star. Where can people check out your coverage of the draft as the draft continues?
Extensive. I am yes, you can hear me on the Athletic Football Show several times a week, but also we are doing live shows to covering the draft, the round 1, 2, and 3. If obviously this podcast doesn't come out in time for those, we're live on YouTube for those, but you can also hear the shows anywhere that you get your podcasts. But that's really where you find me, that and my Twitter account at Nate_Tice. There's going to be starting an uptick of non-football tweets, though, after this draft ends. You might see some random studies I'm doing soon. Like, I actually might study the Steelers offense pretty soon. I'm pretty the second half of the year. So that's, I know, this is just.
Are we going to get Twitch Nate the return?
We might, because I do want to do a Pickett and Desmond Ridder kind of thing. And now that I don't write with The Athletic now, it's kind of a. That might be my forum. I do want to get back on the Twitch though. Once my son is sleeping the night, I have a 6-month-old. Once he's starting to sleep the night and I have a little more energy to do that, you might see me back on Twitch. Not just streaming Overwatch 2, but streaming football film.
There we go. I love it. Nate, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me, Bill. That was awesome.
Well, thanks so much to Nate Tice, our wonderful guest. Nate's the best. Check out Nate's work at The Athletic. And we have more audio coming next week. We'll do more draft recap, sort of set the scene for the rest of the offseason here on The Bill Barnwell Show. So thanks so much for listening.